Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. NATO faces a dilemma. Member countries are divided on how to proceed regarding Ukraine. 9 countries want membership for Ukraine immediately. 21 member countries disagree. Then there is the issue of what exactly Ukraine is today. Is NATO willing to liberate the regions that are joining Russia? Crosstalking NATO's dilemma, I'm joined by my guest, Joe Lorre, in Washington. He's the editor-in-chief of ConsortiumNews.com. In New York, we have Margaret Kimberly. She is executive editor of Black Agenda Report. And in Lake Jackson, we have Daniel McAdams. He's the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect, folks. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let me go to you first in Lake Jackson. If you agree or disagree, the 4 regions of Ukraine are about to officially be brought into the Russian Federation. Now, considering that NATO is at war with Russia, with the accession of these regions, the script has been flipped. So they're not defending Ukraine's borders. They're trying to change Russia's now. And then I want to talk about all of this very dangerous talk about nuclear weapons. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, I think what Putin is practicing here is maneuver warfare. And obviously, there are plenty of people who think they're in Putin's head. I don't know, but he's thinking, I can only observe what I've seen. But it seems to me as if the reason this was a special military operation in the beginning is that President Putin did not realize that this would be a NATO versus Russia war, as you correctly point out in your introduction, Peter. So he's been able to scale up his response to NATO's increasing involvement, the introduction of heavy weaponry, the introduction of direct targeting by NATO. And I think that forced him to go to the next level, which is to agree to something that he had disagreed with for quite some time. Remember, these republics, or at least some of them, the Donbass, wanted to join Russia back in 2014, and Putin was not interested in doing it at that time. It's forced him, or I would say it's led him to make this conclusion that to establish facts on the ground is the only way to respond to the fact that NATO itself is at war with Russia. Hence the sort of the beginning of partial mobilization and the end of any pretense that this is a Russia-Ukraine war any longer.
Joe, essentially the same question to you. And on top of that, we have President Zelensky, almost like a child, a juvenile, folding his arms and saying, I'm not going to talk to Putin. Okay. I have to believe that that was whispered in his ear, considering all of the loose rhetoric we've heard, considering with the background of the pipelines being destroyed here. They're upping the rhetoric here, but Russia is changing the political facts on the ground. Joe, go ahead.
I think it's not an overstatement that we're in the most dangerous period maybe in all of history. And I'm forget the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is a hot war going on. And we had JFK in office, not the present U.S. president. If NATO decides to move on these new territories that Russia is absorbing, I think the time for arguing who's right or wrong in this war, and I've done that in articles and on other shows and this show, is over. We've got to get both sides together to end this. And that would mean giving up territory by Ukraine. Then that's what's going to have to happen, because this has got to end before we're all dead. And I'm serious about that. You know, the Russians put up with this for 30 years being pushed into this. We saw Putin's anger flashing at the 2007 Munich Security Conference. And now in this last speech, I mean, he laid it all out. Of course, the West cannot understand a word he's talking about. Some of them, they cannot see themselves the way others see them. Now, I'm sure there's some cynics within the U.S. establishment and leadership, and they know what's going on and what the danger is. They know that their so-called mission to spread their exceptionalism is rubbish and that they're actually pushing their own interests. So maybe the cynics are going to have to save us. They're going to have to realize that they can't push this any further, and both sides have to sit down and talk and end this thing now.
Yeah, well, Margaret, I absolutely agree with what Joe has said, what Daniel said. But if you follow the advice of Joe, then you're an apologist, you're an appeaser, all of the worst things you could possibly, quizzling, all, you know, it's pull out everything, okay? And that is why we got ourselves into this situation. I'm sorry to be a nerd about this here, but I did recall over and over again on my program, until it was banned on YouTube, that on December 17th, the gauntlet was dropped. We have to negotiate before it gets hot. And this is where we are right now, okay? So, you know, no negotiations. There's, you know, then people say there has to be a diplomatic solution. Well, it takes two to talk, and one doesn't want to talk because one is being told not to talk. Margaret.
Yes, and there was a time when they were talking. So it's very clear they were told not to. And as for Zelensky's little performance, lest we forget he is an actor, if the United States told him to talk, he would. Ukraine has been a de facto U.S. colony since 2014. So anything they say or do is what Washington is telling them, Washington and their allies, particularly in the U.K., but this, I agree completely with Joe, this is a very, very dangerous moment. Not only do you have a government, Joe Biden, a weak president, not very smart, with a not very smart team of people who have this fantasy that they hope to make a reality. So not only does Ukraine blow up in their faces, but they will add to that by antagonizing China. This is the worst group of people that I can remember in my life running foreign policy in this country.
And they have the media
helping them.
And that's saying something, Margaret, considering the decades of strings of failure and destruction and death and wasted treasury. Daniel, for me, the Rubicon was finally crossed with the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, because you can't fix them quickly. Why would Russia fix them? They would be up for sabotage again. I mean, they have drawn the line. The Europeans are going to suffer for this. Germany even protested? Who in Europe has even protested this? And then you have Tony Blinken saying, it's a tremendous opportunity here. I mean, when people tell you who they are, believe them. Daniel.
It is very obvious, you know, and Colonel Doug McGregor was on Fox, I think, the other day saying what can't be said out loud, which is that it's obvious that either the U.S., the U.K., Poland, or some combination of the three, which is probably the case, is responsible for this. And it is remarkable, as you point out, the Germans aren't saying anything. Stoltenberg at NATO said, well, clearly this looks like some kind of sabotage. It's, you know, the elephant in the room. Is this, I mean, it reminds me of the MH17, you know, the plane that just happened to get blown up and was blamed on Russia. The idea that there's anything in it for Russia to blow up their own pipeline of multi-billion dollars, to lose $500 million worth of gas in thin air, it makes no sense, obviously. It feels like a desperation move, but not against Russia. And this is the important point, I think, Peter, which is this was an attack not on Russia's property only, but mostly an attack on Germany.
Yep.
Germany has no chance. And there have been some indications that there were some discussions going on between Russia and Germany. There's unrest in Germany. People are taking to the streets, and it hasn't gotten cold yet. The last outlet for them to basically save themselves this winter is to restart Nord Stream 1 and to start Nord Stream 2. That's now off the table for the most part. So this was an attack on Germany to make sure that Germany does not find any kind of rapprochement with Russia.
Well, Daniel, or said in a different way, but agreeing with you, is to maintain American hegemony over Europe. That's the point here, okay? And Joe, so I guess NATO, you know, its very foundation was the Russians out, the Germans down, and the Americans in. I think you didn't need the Cold War for that, okay? Because that's the way the U.S. wants to maintain its control over Europe. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, you know, this term comprador, when the indigenous leaders are selling out their own people to serve a foreign power, was always associated with developing countries. And it's now occurred to me really clearly that European leaders, Western European leaders, are the same thing. These are colonies. You could throw Australia in there, and they are doing whatever the U.S. wants at the expense of their own people. And there's never been clearer than what's going on right now, where they're not only risking their own economies, their own political futures, if the people do get out on the street, and they have begun to do that, and, of course, a nuclear confrontation, as we were discussing. So the U.S. has shown total control over their vassals, really, in Europe, and it's really disheartening to see this.
Yeah, it is. I mean, why don't they just say no? Because, no, all of their elites have been co-opted. They co-opted all of their elites that serve not the interests of their people. As the German foreign minister said, you know, she doesn't care what her voters say. Okay, she doesn't care. She said that, literally said that. I don't care what my voters say. Okay, Margaret, one of the things that I've noticed, and I've been saying this ever since 2014, is that the more the West backs whatever government there is in Kiev, the smaller the country gets. Have you noticed that?
Yes. What a great success. And, you know, everyone acts as though this was a new unprovoked attack. This has been going on for years. And yes, Ukraine has not benefited at all from this vassal status. It was already the poorest country in Europe, the most corrupt country in Europe, although the media don't say that anymore. What a surprise. In February, suddenly it wasn't. But we see the Ukrainian people suffering, Zelensky outlawing political parties, denying people the right to bargain collectively, basically turning over the country to foreign investment. So the U.S. interference in this country has been an absolute disaster for their people. Now we've had war since February, many people dead, disruption, displacement. So there's nothing good about Ukraine having hitched its wagon to the U.S. and its allies. It's been an absolute disaster for them.
Well, Margaret, we're going to quickly go to a break here, but I think there are elements. I mean, we have like the Hunter Bidens that have done very, very well, and of course, Ukraine's oligarchs are doing extremely well because, as far as I can tell, Margaret, there's no audit of where those weapons are going, where all that money is going, and there'll never be an audit, okay? And so there's no accountability here. As a matter of fact, the U.S. no longer tracks where its arms go. That whole division of the Pentagon was shut down. Just suddenly, they don't want people to know. All right, well, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on NATO's dilemma. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing NATO's dilemma. Okay, let's go back to Daniel and Lake Jackson. I think all of us would agree that this is the biggest propaganda psych-op operation of all time, and we've seen a lot of them in our lifetime here. Daniel, it's been said, accidentally said, Biden said it by mistake, you know, regime change. But this is really what it's all about. I mean, Ukraine is just the proxy. These people, Victoria Nuland, people like that, they don't care about Ukraine. They care about humiliating Russia and defeating Russia here. And this is, with the pipelines, do you need any more proof than that? Go ahead, Daniel.
What's interesting is that Zbigniew Brzezinski's son is now the U.S. ambassador in Warsaw.
Yeah.
That does make you wonder a little bit. The person whose father is responsible for the creation of the Mujahideen with the idea of using them to overthrow the Soviet Union in Russia back then. It's the same group of people that have been in power for decades, now finally getting their opportunity to do what they planned to do forever. They thought that that the 2014 coup would do it. But of course, then they thought the Orange Revolution before then would do it, completely oblivious to the realities of the fact that Ukraine has been a divided country. Those sections of Ukraine that are now rejoining Russia were part of Russia up until 1922, when Lenin peeled them away and gave them to Ukraine. Of course, we know that Crimea was peeled away later than that in the 50s by Khrushchev. This would have been a natural process anywhere else, where you had people voting 90% for the candidate that was considered to be the most pro-Russia in those regions. It's a natural feature of self-determination that they would decide to join this. It's only the U.S., as you say, Peter, with this fantasy of overthrowing the Russian government and again subjugating Russia as it did during Yeltsin to its own will, to the U.S., to Washington's own will, that's driving this. And as Joe is absolutely right, absolutely deadly world-ending policy.
Joe, I want to go back to that. All through the mainstream legacy media is that the worry that Putin's going to use nukes, okay? I don't know where this came from. The first person, there was a French foreign minister that first mentioned nukes during all of this, not Russia. And Russia has reiterated its nuclear doctrine, and it's not changed whatsoever. So, Joe, my proposition is this. This is a form of projection. We, you know, I have talked to a lot of military, real people, not the losers on TV, okay, but people that actually know what they're talking about. And is that NATO doesn't have the conventional forces to fight a war against Russia, but it does have one weapon in its arsenal that is very deadly for all of us. And this is what I'm really worried about. They're saying the Russians are going to do it, but they're projecting because that's their only line of defense. Joe.
Look, they're twisting in the Western media and Western leaders what exactly Russia is saying on this. They're changing a warning into a threat. There's a big difference between a warning and a threat. If you go to a power station and it says warning high voltage, it doesn't say threat high voltage. That means you actually have to do something in order to be harmed, whereas that's a warning. Whereas in a threat, you could be completely innocent and be attacked. And just a person could kill someone and say, I'm going to kill you out of a fit of rage. Whereas if someone says, if you pick up that gun, I'm going to shoot you, that's self-defense. The difference between aggression and self-defense right here. Russia has laid out, yes, their nuclear doctrine, which has not changed, which is if you attack Russian territory, even with non-conventional means, if it's existentially a threat to Russia, survival of Russia, then they could use nuclear weapons. But I don't know exactly what these secret messages were that we read about in the Washington Post that have been going on for weeks, if not months now, from the U.S. side to Russia regarding nuclear weapons. I fear that you might be right, and I hope that you're wrong, Peter, that actually it's the Western side that is making a threat rather than just a warning, because we've reached the end of the road here in the long period of a battle between unilateral U.S. dominance and the rest of the world resisting that. We've come to the head right now. So we can't be talking about this in such a blithe way, nuclear weapons. And I don't think that there's the public consciousness than there was in the October crisis 60 years ago in Cuba. So as I said before, it's time to put all this talk aside and make a deal and end this war now.
Margaret, for the Russian side, this is existential. It is to be or not to be. But for the West, this is a craven choice, and it's ideologically driven. And that's what makes this so dangerous, because, I read TASS, you know, the government news agency, one of the most boring things you could read. It's terribly, terribly boring. But it's one fact after another. This was what was said. That's it. No editorializing. I read it all the time. And they say all the time what they're going to do. It's a very, you know, what is in Putin's head? What is he thinking? It's not hard to figure out. Go there. Go to the Kremlin website. It's all there in black and white. Go ahead, Margaret.
Well, what we get is war propaganda. We see outlets like the New York Times. The New York Times is just a mouthpiece for the Biden administration. And that's part of the danger. We don't get real news. We have war propaganda, New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, et cetera. It's nothing but U.S. propaganda. No information, no facts, nothing that is of any benefit to people. As Joe said, projection in order to normalize the idea of hot war, to normalize the idea of nuclear war. And by the way, the U.S. Does not rule out a first strike. So we know that that's U.S. policy. The U.S. gives itself permission to use nukes first. And we're dealing with people who are not very smart. Every act of desperation makes their situation worse. They didn't destroy Russia's economy. They've destroyed the economies all over the world. They've blown up this pipeline and, in effect, attacked an ally, a terrorist attack. So we're dealing with people who don't know what they're doing, who are, as you say, ideologically driven, who have some crazy fantasy about being able to get rid of Putin or have regime change. So we are in a very, very difficult situation with these people in charge at this moment.
You know, Daniel, I think all of us are, you know, we're kind of close in age here, all of us, same generation, let's put it that way. How in the world has the mainstream media and the current political elite normalized nuclear war? Because they have.
Yeah, nothing seems real. I mean, everything is invented out of whole cloth. It's incredible to think about. You know, you talk about propaganda. You know, we talked about there was a tweet from the Associated Press this week that said there is a Kremlin-backed conspiracy theory going around saying that the United States blew up these pipelines. So, I mean, that's masterful propaganda, because if you happen to question that Russia did it, well, then you're obviously a dupe of the Kremlin. It's just so blatant now. And I think this is also the way that this has escalated. The U.S. continues to throw things at it. We're not seeing a reaction. They'll continue to do more and more. But what disturbs me the most is, yes, the people in power are incompetent, but we don't have an opposition party in the United States. The Republicans, if they had any brains, and they don't, they would be running as the pro-peace party right now. Biden has dumped the entire military budget of Russia into Ukraine over the past 7 months, and it's gone down a black hole. It's done nothing. You know, the Republicans have this on a platter, but they are also so enamored with war, so caught up in the military-industrial complex, so caught up in war rhetoric, that they would literally rather not win the House and Senate in November than to turn and adopt a more sensible foreign policy that would have a broader appeal.
Yeah, I find most liberals stupid, but Republicans are scary. That's how I look at them, okay? A plague on both them, okay? You know, Joe, when I was in graduate school, we used to read the New York Review of Books, okay? And the section I really liked was history, Eastern Europe, you know, Soviet Union, Russia, and all of that. And there was an enormous amount of debate, and it was really riveting. There's no debate anywhere anymore. I mean, and to prove that point, they banned me from YouTube. They banned me from Twitter, okay? There's no debate. No, they don't even give me the chance to be insulted anymore. Joe.
That's what makes this a much more dangerous period than any time, perhaps in recent history, certainly, because there is no argument in the U.S. or in the West. There used to be, in the 70s, a real argument about whether we should pursue, the Americans should pursue détente or not with the Soviet Union. That is gone. There's no argument. You cannot say anything that goes against the official narrative. This is what's so frightening. The U.S. needed this war. They needed Russia to intervene so that they could launch their economic war and their proxy war on the ground, and especially their information wars in the context we're talking about right now. And they are winning that part of it. They're losing the economic war, clearly. Sanctions are backfiring. Ruble is stronger than ever, but they're winning the information war. And this is extremely part of the danger that we're living through right now, because you can't even argue these points. You can't raise any questions. We've been shut down on PayPal, Consortium News. NewsGuard has given us their red mark. And so many people have kicked off Twitter and YouTube for simply raising questions. This cannot go on, because if it does, it's part of the reason we're leading ourselves down this extremely dangerous path, because we can't even have a discussion about what's going on.
You know, Margaret, you know, I have said repeatedly, you know, that this is existential. The fate of Ukraine is very important to Russia's security. And that is banned speech. But you know what? Barack Obama said exactly the same thing when he was leaving office. Just imagine, in a short amount of time. I mean, if he said that today, I guess technically he would be banned. Margaret.
Well, yes, he would be. But you know, this is why they had this crazy idea of a disinformation board. That was all about Ukraine, to shut down any discussion altogether. So you have people who are, the more they read, the more misinformed they are. And this is a bipartisan project. Democrats and Republicans all too often are on board. There are on the same side more often, I believe, than actually they are different. So we need the left to step up, stop arguing about what you feel about Vladimir Putin, and speak up. And the left in Europe apparently disappeared. I find it shocking that the U.S. has, in effect, attacked the EU. People are literally starting to freeze, and there's no movement. Of course, they blew up the pipeline to try to shut that down. But the left needs to step up.
Let me finish on this point, because what they also do and do very well is they keep all of us apart from each other. They make us hate each other, okay? And I refuse to do that on this program. I have progressives on all the time, libertarians all the time. Very few liberals come on, but I do my best. That's all the time we have. We need more debate. Maybe that's what will save us here. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, New York, and in Lake Jackson. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.